Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, some social unrest over in Russia, plus a human rights campaign wins big at South by Southwest, and what exactly is Whisper, and do we want to use it? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 153, recorded Thursday, March 13th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/social hour. That's lynda.com/social hour. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 280,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/social hour to receive a free PowerPack upgrade valued at $99. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR. Hey, everybody, welcome to another fancy edition of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm no longer in snowy Toronto. I've finally taken off, and I'm in South Florida for the next few weeks, so I'll be doing the show from down here. And I'm super happy about that, Sarah, because I do believe that Toronto got pounded by yet another big storm. And I do feel sorry for my friends back there, but I'm happy to be at the beach.
I'm happy to have you at the beach because I want you to be warm and comfortable. You look pretty happy. You've already got, you've got that sunny disposition thing going on. Must be the Florida salty air.
It is. It's always good. So love coming down here. And it's always a nice little break from the cold weather. And I have to say, Sarah, when I was looking through links, there are just so many this week, like every week in the social media world. But this week in particular, I felt like, wow, an hour might not even be enough because we have so much stuff to cover.
We do. I guess we should start off with something from Russia. Now, you found this link. It was in the New York Times. And it's a story about, how do you even summarize this? A story about how a very large social network in Russia has been handed over to the Kremlin. And the name of it is something that I've never heard of before. Would you pronounce it VKontakte?
It's funny. I thought about that before the show. So it's VK.com, although that is just the URL. I don't know how to pronounce the official name, but it is something like you said. And it's a really interesting story because it looks as though this particular social network is one of the largest social networks in the world, obviously behind Facebook, but they still have about 228 million users. So it's a massive online community. Now, it had been independently owned for a really long time. There were a couple minor stakeholders, but just recently, the Kremlin has in some ways really kind of not taken over, but there are Putin supporters who are businessmen who have bought a majority stake in this particular social network. So when it comes to free speech online and the community in Russia and Russian speaking individuals around the world who depend on this social network, it's a bit of a blow in some ways because we know increasingly with the Kremlin, there have been so many stories about how they're clamping down on free speech. Just in this article as well, they say in January, Parliament passed a law allowing the government to quickly block any undesirable website. So it's an unfortunate thing. I guess the only good news is the founder, the creator of this website has gone on, and even though he's still involved as a minority owner, he's gone on and he's starting a new social network. So it has thousands of people so far, and maybe it will take off as well.
Yeah, it's been around since 2006. For any audio listeners, we were showing what a typical page looks like on VK. It looks a lot like Facebook, where with pages and profiles and photos and that sort of thing. It's weird, though, isn't it? I mean, this site has been around since 2006. Pavel Durov is the man behind it. Sounds like, under increasing pressure over the last year or so, ended up selling his 12% share of the company, which quite a bit for such a large company, to Ivan Tavrin, who's a partner of the pro-Putin regime. And that is a sort of a frightening thing. Yeah, it sounds like he's decided, the site's owner has decided, yeah, to go along with something called, what is the next? It was Telegram. This is his next venture. Yeah, it is like leaving Russia and the whole thing. But it would be the weirdest thing. The two weird things about this. First, that I'm like, oh, I've never even heard of this network, and there are many, many millions of people using it. And the second is, can you imagine something like that happening here? Oh, Facebook now is part of the U.S. government. They're the majority owner. I mean, it's just, it would be unheard of. Or would it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be in an unfortunate situation in many different ways, although I guess if it did happen here, then perhaps we could hope that they didn't clamp down on free speech. But I think based on Russia's history, I mean, it looks like there could be issues in the future. You know, maybe they will let people continue to have free conversations on the social network, but I don't know. I mean, they don't have the best history for allowing people to do so. So we'll see what happens. And maybe the new social network that has been launched by the original founder of this website will launch something equally as awesome that people love. But it will be hard to attract 223 million users, Sarah, because that's just a massive online community.
Is it too much to hope that we can get him on the social hour to talk a little bit about?
Oh, great idea.
Why not?
Just do it. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to make a note to myself, Sarah.
Yeah, just put on the to-do list. He can tell us a little bit about how it feels to have a social network under increasing government pressure.
Yeah, I love that idea. From the Kremlin. And, you know, it's so interesting because I'm just fascinated with all these social networks in different parts of the world, because I think so often we kind of look inward and we use Facebook and Twitter all these other websites, and we forget that, you know, they really don't necessarily dominate in most countries internationally. So it's neat to see the impact of communities like this that have really taken a bite out of the Facebook community.
Well, on another political note, but this time in the U.S., there is it's a polarizing web series hosted by Zach Galifianakis called Between Two Ferns. If you're not familiar with the show, I don't know where you've been. Some people think he's very funny. I'm in that camp. Other people do not. But he's got a show where he basically acts like a dope, and he sits with celebrities and basically acts like he doesn't know who they are and kind of is offensive, and it's very funny. Anyway, Between Two Ferns had Barack Obama, President Barack Obama of the United States, as a guest the other day. And besides the fact that I thought it was pretty funny and just shows that, hey, even a president can sort of be in on a joke and have some deadpan humor, it was a way to promote healthcare.gov, which Mr. Obama did promote during the show. And it sounds like, Amber, there was a huge amount of traffic driven to this site, supposedly for new healthcare signups, because of this funny show, which I guess is probably a win for everybody.
Yeah, you know, they just released a report, and this was on Mashable, also on Twitter, that saying that traffic to healthcare.gov was 40% higher on Tuesday than the day before, after Obama had made that surprise appearance. I watched the video. I mean, it's quite a lengthy interview, and it's absolutely hilarious. You know, it's neat how they weave in the message trying to encourage a younger generation to go to the website, because they sort of say, obviously, President Obama is there for a plug, and this is the plug. But beyond that, it's just worth watching the video, because it is hilarious. I mean, especially when Zach is really, you know, trying to have a serious conversation and the president starts kind of jabbing him about the Hangover movies.
Yeah, I know. It's great. It's funny. Harlequin in our chat room says, it felt scripted to me. Well, yes.
It was.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is not just sort of like off the cuff. Can you imagine if Zach Galifianakis says, just sit down, President Obama, and, you know, we'll just, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to ask you. We'll just riff.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly.
Right, exactly. No, it was hysterical. And I definitely saw, because I follow some Twitter accounts that are associated with the White House and President Obama and people who are involved with healthcare.org. And they were really excited about it because they could see the site traffic just skyrocketing, because funnier or not, people maybe for the first time we're saying, maybe I should go to healthcare.gov. It sounds like it might be a good option for me. I don't know how far we want to get down that rat hole, because then I'm going to get a lot of angry people writing us saying,
I love how you censor yourself, Sarah. It's like you've gone through years of abuse or something from people emailing all these negative emails. You're like, don't talk about religion. Don't talk about politics. Yeah. You know those things to stay away from, right?
Right. I just feel like I always have to say, and you might be on one side or the other, but here's this great social story. Now, it was funny. I actually had a spirited debate with a friend of mine on Facebook. I used to work with at Tech TV, actually, who says, Zach Galifianakis is not funny. I mean, when will the world wake up and realize that? And I was like, I think he is. I don't know.
I think he's funny. I mean, he's
one of those people who... It's not everybody's cup of
tea. Yeah, I mean, he's so not funny that it's funny, right? Like,
right.
It's very dry and it's not for everybody, but I do think he's pretty funny. It's definitely a good video to watch. And I think that whether you are on the side of the president or not, he did a good job of just kind of riffing. And even though it was scripted, it was humorous at many points.
Indeed. Also possibly humorous to anybody who ended up reading this correspondence. You found this story about somebody who rejected someone else who was looking for, it sounds like, to make some contacts, looking for a job on LinkedIn.
Yeah, this is a pretty interesting story, because I think there is some confusion often on LinkedIn about how you properly approach someone. Some people feel as though, oh, you shouldn't reach out and connect with people who you don't know. Some people think it's okay. But where this story gets really interesting is that this particular individual who runs a popular online job bank for marketing professionals in Cleveland, she was approached by someone who sent an email and just requesting that they become contacts on LinkedIn, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, you would assume that this individual, Kelly, who runs this job bank, would be used to people approaching her because that's kind of what she does. But instead, she wrote back this nasty email on LinkedIn that said, your invite to connect is inappropriate, beneficial only to you, and tacky. Wow, I cannot wait to let every 26-year-old job seeker mine my top-tier marketing connections to help them land a job. And it really just went on and on. She goes on to say, I love the sense of entitlement in your generation, blah, 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 blah. And as you can see, it spirals kind of out of control. And I think the invitation and the initial email from the person reaching out really wasn't terribly inappropriate. But what ended up happening is this response obviously spread throughout some of the blogs, went viral pretty quickly online, and a huge backlash against this individual who was just somewhat rude in her comments. And I think it was fairly unnecessary, especially based on her position.
Wow. It's like, hey, we all have bad days, but you really got to go out of your way to write somebody a message like that.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to ignoring? I mean, if and this is not like some kid, right? This is a 26-year-old woman who's moving to the Cleveland, Ohio area from somewhere else and is thinking, all right, well, let's see who maybe some powerful people are in the community I'd like to be a part of. I'll reach out on LinkedIn. That's what LinkedIn was built for, specifically.
Exactly.
And right, if the what was she the communicator of the year of the city of Cleveland, and gets a request from somebody that for whatever reason rubs you the wrong way, man, I mean, what is with that hatred?
Yeah,
and it sounds like if you the article on CNN that I got caught up on, sounds like once this went viral, there were a couple other people that came out of the woodwork and said, you know, I got a really nasty response from her as well when I did something similar. So she sort of has a history of lashing out, and I don't understand how she has so many contacts if that's the way that she's behaving.
I totally agree. I mean, to be fair, she did end up apologizing and said in this article, I'm very sorry to have hurt people if in fact I did do so. And she explains that it's been a hobby of hers forever to update the Cleveland Job Bank listings. And I think she realizes that there is a bit of damage that has been done based on her terse email. So I don't know. You know, this is just a constant lesson and a constant reminder to people out there that if you put anything in writing online, it very easily can be shared. So I think to Sarah's point, just ignore the email. I mean, if you don't want to connect, ignore it. And I think there needs to be more of that in the social media space. I'm kind of sick of seeing people rant on Facebook or wherever it might be and saying, oh, this person did this, or they emailed me this. It's just, you know what? just ignore it. Take the higher ground and move on.
Yeah.
Life's too short.
Well, and then it sort of becomes a conversation of, all right, well, so what's the problem here? She's probably getting a lot of requests from people and feels like she's being manipulated because she has a lot of contacts. And so maybe over time she's decided that people are using her for the network that she's built up and, you know, riding her coattails. Oh, right. Okay. Well, if that's the case, yeah, you and I think both of us and really anybody who has any sort of a presence on social media, people will hit you up all the time and say, can you please retweet this? This is a good cause. Maybe I'm raising money for, or it's somebody's birthday. Can you say happy birthday to them? You know, you can't always honor everyone's request, but to go out of your way and make them feel small for reaching out is just absolutely not the way to go. And that's just human decency. I don't care if it's social media or face-to-face.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think there's so much of this happening anyway online, people lashing out saying, oh, it was inappropriate for you to do this. I think someone tweeted me a while ago and was asking about certain etiquette for doing things on Twitter. And I just feel like, you know what, just good common sense, right? And that's what should prevail. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. But in this situation, her email was just so harsh. And I'm sure that she regrets it because so many people just coming out of the woodwork saying that they thought it was totally inappropriate and probably happy they weren't on the other end of it as well.
Yeah. Jeez. I don't want to be chewed out for trying to make some
friends.
Me neither. Man. All right, let's talk a little bit about South by Southwest, which Interactive ended a couple days ago. I think the last official day was Tuesday. And there were some awards that are given out each year for, you know, best design or web presence, that sort of thing. And it sounds like Human Rights, a big winner.
Yeah, a huge winner. So the Human Rights Campaign logo, which based on this Technorati link that I have, it was created in 1995. But if you remember in March of 2013, when the U.S. Supreme Court was hearing arguments about marriage equality, they actually came out with a red version of the logo for HRC. And many people were using that red version on their profile on social media accounts on Twitter and Facebook and beyond. And it spread really quickly, and a lot of people obviously supporting marriage equality. And just recently at South by Southwest, like you mentioned, this particular social media campaign, it won top awards in three different South by Southwest categories, including social media, digital campaign of the year, and best of show.
You know, it's that logo. And it sounds like over the years it was created in 1995 and has been in various colors, and the latest red and kind of a gray is just the latest incarnation of it. But yeah, I don't see it so much anymore, Amber, but there was it last year or maybe even a couple of years ago, a point where, and obviously this coincides with certain political initiatives and, you know, people passing gay rights bills and that sort of thing. But everybody had this as their profile picture. It was Facebook. It was Twitter. It was like this understood thing that's what you're showing support for. I think Beyonce at one point had changed her profile picture to this. So it is one of those iconic logos that it seems so simple and it ends up being so powerful. And it is powerful, even though it is something that when you look at it, you go, oh, I don't know, anybody could have made that up, but...
Yeah, but it's nice to see. I mean, I was thinking initially, because I was kind of poking around to see if there were any awards at South by Southwest, and I was thinking about social campaigns and thinking, okay, well, this award is going to go to someone like Oreo for coming up with that advertisement during the Super Bowl of last year, the real-time ad that they created. So it's kind of nice to see that instead you have an organization like this who took all of these top awards, and I do remember, like you, I mean, I think it was a year ago or so when people started changing their profile images. So a little bit of news out of South by Southwest. And I have to say, Sarah, I don't know about you, but that's kind of it for me. I mean, I haven't seen anything terribly new being launched there, except for, of course, some sad news about an accident that took place there I think it was today or yesterday.
It was last night, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple of friends who are down there for the music portion of the festival, which is going on now. And some car careened into a crowd and killed a couple of people and hurt dozens of other people. I think it was like 23 people went to the hospital. Terrible news. Terrible. They're fine. But yeah, it's that's really has nothing to do with anything. But, you know, it's actually funny. So this morning I get up and the first thing I do is check my Facebook news feed. And one of my friends says, "We're okay. Thanks, everyone, for their concern." And there was no context or anything. And I'm sort of like, what is she talking about? And so it's like, okay, well, what? She's at South by Southwest. Something must have happened. What do I do? So I went to Twitter and I typed in South by Southwest search, you know, tweets containing XSW. And of course, the first result is a story from Pitchfork, which is a music magazine, explaining what happened. So it's a. I thought it was kind of interesting what my thought process was to find out what the context was of this thing I didn't understand. Yeah. And sure enough, it was very easy to do on Twitter.
Yeah. No, I do that all the time with news bits. I mean, if I see someone tweeting something or someone emailing or posting something on Facebook, I'll just go to Twitter and start doing major searches. And you just can get news so much faster. And then you keep refreshing all the time. So it's become more of a habit for me as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't do without it. All right. Well, let's move on. A quick reminder, though, that we are live on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, which is Amber's time and my time. Works out very well. Everybody in between and beyond. I don't have all of the time zones handy, but hopefully.
Come on, Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, God. UTC. I always have a problem with UTC. If only Leo were here. But our website is twit.tv/TSH. So if you can't watch us live, that's okay, too. We post all of our show episodes. We've got the video all handy on each episode page. You can get your subscription links, which is, of course, always free, to the audio or the video portion of the show. A lot of people aren't able to watch, but say that they like to listen to us during their day at some point when you're commuting or, I don't know, making dinner or having your headphones on at work pretending to do something else. I don't know. But thanks to everybody who watches us live and watches us on demand each week. All right, let's take a moment to thank Lynda.com for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. If you're watching or listening to us, you're probably interested in social media. Of course, that's what we talk about. So what if we said you could learn a bunch of new programs, a bunch of new tools that would help you leverage this whole social media business? Sounds pretty good, right? With easy-to-follow video tutorials on lynda.com, you can do that. These are online courses where you can learn at your own pace from top industry experts. With a subscription as a member, you'll receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover all sorts of stuff. Yeah, sure, social media, but a variety of software, business skills, stuff that you may have always wanted to know more about, but think, well, you know, I'm not going to go back to school anytime soon. How would I actually gain these skills? Who do I know that could teach me? This is exactly what lynda.com is great for. You can start using a WordPress blog. Maybe WordPress has always been a platform you're interested in, but it seems kind of daunting. You can take better photos for your social media posts. You can learn how to better advertise using Google AdWords. A lot of people make a lot of money that way. You'd like to as well. You can use Google Analytics to measure the effectiveness of your content, even Microsoft Excel to create pivot tables, analyze data. All of that stuff is available at lynda.com. In fact, there are some new courses this week. Foundations of Programming. I love the idea of that because I don't know how to program, but I sure would like to. Programming for Kids. Up and Running with 3D Printing. Up and Running with Constant Contact. UX Design Skills. Photoshop. Amber, I don't know how to do any of that stuff. This is the perfect week for me on Lynda.
We just got a 3D printer at our house and we haven't really done too much with it. So I could use the 3D printing course.
Oh, that's awesome. A 3D printer, huh? Ooh,
I can't wait to see
what you print first. Over 2,000 courses. Courses are being added daily. Lynda.com is insanely high quality video production, state-of-the-art studios. This is not homemade stuff. It's top-notch here. You can watch from your computer or your tablet, your mobile device. You can also switch screens. Maybe you get halfway through a course at your computer and you got to go somewhere. You can finish up on your phone, pick up on each course where you left off, and jump around. You can go from beginning to end or you can jump right in. Yeah, ooh, 3D printing course. Ooh, I like the look of that already. Learn something new in 2014 with lynda.com. $25 a month to access the entire lynda.com course library. For $37.50 per month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. That includes some extra goodies, exercise files, lets you follow along with the instructor's own project using their assets. So you can drill down a little bit more. Lynda.com right now. Try it free for 7 days. LYNDA.com/social hour. Access the entire library for an entire week. Over 2,000 courses for free. It's all at lynda.com/social hour. And thanks to lynda.com for supporting us. All right, Amber, this is something new that we are going to try out. And this was actually your idea.
Yeah, I had just mentioned before the show, I have a friend who tweets new job postings in the broadcast television industry all the time. And I think that it's really neat because so many people are looking for work. And I think it's something we could do on the show on the social hour really well, particularly because I did find this cool job. So let's say we have a new segment on the show called Gig of the Week. And if you have social media jobs you want to let us know about that you've posted, please do let us know. This one in particular is interesting, especially if you love Wikipedia. At Harvard, they are looking for someone in the library who has skills editing Wikipedia. They are calling the job Wikipedian in Residence Assistant. And it's a 3-month temporary position. It pays about $16 an hour. So if you're in school, this would be a great gig for you. And of course, the skills you need to have, you need to understand how to update a wiki and create new pages and edit pages and all that other information. You have to be in good standing on Wikipedia as well. So if there are Wikipedians who are listening to the social hour, this could be a fun little job for you.
I love the idea that Harvard Library is like, hey, we need some sort of a Wikipedia expert. Somebody who not only understands the syntax, but is in good standing with the Wikipedia community, because it's easy not to be if you abuse the community aspects of updating. And it's like the librarian plus the social media know-how, they really go perfectly together.
Yeah, they definitely do. And this was, such a great job for anyone who loves Wikipedia and loves the social space. But, there are so many other gigs out there as well that I've seen in postings, and we'll just try to share them on the show. And I think it'll be a good little service for people who are listening and who are watching. So please let us know if you find anything else.
Yeah, Gig of the Week. It's our new thing on the social hour. We want everybody to get paid. Doing stuff that's fun and relevant. All right, our social tip of the week. This is awesome because in the camera wars, I don't even really know if there are a lot of camera wars anymore. I should ask a photographer. But, they're the Canon people versus the Nikon people. And I decided a long time ago that I was in the Nikon camp. I don't really know why, but I've just decided that that's kind of my legacy company. Why? I don't know. But it sounds like Nikon is doing quite a social media push with a variety of tutorials to make us all better photographers.
Yeah, this is cool, especially for photo enthusiasts. And I think it's a smart idea for them. They've launched a video series that is available on YouTube and Google+. And they have, I think, about 15 videos that they plan to release. And they have a schedule that they've also posted online of when they'll be releasing the videos. And if you're in the social media space, I think a lot of the topics are really relevant to you. If you are an enthusiast and you want to know how to have better lighting or shoot pictures of kids. And it's a fun idea. I watched one of the videos. They're about 3 minutes long. Very well done, obviously, and some really great tips. So it was nice to see them do something like this that I think is much more useful in many ways, Sarah. The content will be very helpful for people, whether you use Nikon or not.
Yeah, this is awesome stuff. I have never been, that much of a photography expert, but I certainly am interested in it. And I know I'm not alone. Especially because we all carry around these little cameras with us, and we've got all these great filter tools and editing on the fly. And sometimes I think, in a way, I'm like an iPhone camera editing wizard. At least I understand what tools are at my disposal. But when it really comes down to being a professional photographer, that's a whole other thing. I have friends who are professional photographers, and it always seems like, that's something for people who have, all of these skills that I don't have and have access to all of this equipment that seems expensive, and who knows how to set that up. And the reality of it is, yeah, that's all true, But there are so many skills that you can pick up just by taking a little time with tutorials like this. Obviously, Nikon's not the only company that has online tutorials for photography, but it's obviously put together really well. And we all win when Nikon puts effort into something like this. Online, be part of their Google Plus community, watch their videos, then people end up buying more Nikon products and everybody wins. But yeah, I urge anybody who's interested in photography to take a look and take advantage of this free, basically, online courses.
Yeah, no, exactly. A great little tool. And I think it's good that they really have marketed it to a target audience. You know, they've pushed the content out to be great for enthusiasts, you know, people who just kind of want to dip their toe in and get a sense of some better tips that they can use. And they've kept them nice and short. So obviously the videos, like you said, are beautiful as well. I'm assuming they're also shot on Nikons. And if you're a video enthusiast, you probably would get a lot out of just watching the videos too, because they're very slick.
You know what I was thinking of doing, Amber, is trying out regular film again. I don't know who I think I am, but it seems so difficult. Because it wasn't that long ago. I actually have an old Nikon camera that we used in college for a couple photography classes. And, you know, it's film, and we learned how to print our develop our own film and the whole thing in the dark room. And it seems like it's such a retro activity now. I'm sure there's some darkroom somewhere that I could rent space or time in San Francisco, but I kind of like the idea of that just because it's like the difference between using Bisquick or making pancake batter from scratch. I don't know, something like that. Something about the going about it the hard way appeals to me.
Yeah, you're kind of getting back to the basics. You know, it reminds me of when I moved out to San Francisco in 1999, I worked at Razorfish, but I also took on a job doing just an internship at KQED in San Francisco at the radio station there. And at the time when I got there, you know, I had been learning how to edit digitally. So in my journalism program, we did all of our editing digitally. I get to KQED thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to learn so much here and really advance my skills in terms of editing digitally. I get there and we were still cutting tape, Sarah.
Wow.
Like cutting, slicing tape and taping it together for radio programs. You know, I would cut out all the ahs and ums, and that would be part of my job as an intern. And I was literally like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're doing this in this day and age. So, I just whacked my table. Getting back to the basics, though, to your point, though, it's there was something nice about it.
Yeah.
I have to say.
You know, I'm trying to think of, okay, what year did I graduate college? Ooh, so, all right. So this is a little bit before 1999, but not much. I was a broadcast major at my college, and there were audio courses that I wasn't particularly interested in going into radio, but you had to take them. They were required courses for my degree, and we did the same thing. We learned how to cut reel to reel audio tapes, and I remember being in the class going, nothing in real life is going to be of any, this is not actually a skill that I'm going to need, because at that point desktop video was just starting to happen. But turns out in 1999, the local NPR affiliate in San Francisco was absolutely doing that. So I probably should have paid more attention, because I don't remember how to do it now.
They had one room that was stacked with new computers and new equipment. So they were just kind of delaying the transition. It was one of those things where I think people were stuck in that old way of doing things and they just hadn't quite made the jump. So they were in the middle of all this happening, and I'm sure they took a giant leap forward shortly after that. But fond memories of doing things the old way, sir.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long time.
Good times. I had forgotten all about that class. Well, anyway, that's enough for a walk down memory lane. Let's talk about something that's in a current spotlight. Boy, ephemeral messaging and posting anonymously on the internet has really gained some sort of resurgence lately. And the latest news in this category is it's a website, but it's also an app, it's a service called Whisper, that I guess, Amber, you could compare it to Secret that we profiled here on the Social Hour not that long ago, but a little bit different. What is Whisper?
So it is a place where you can use the app to share your secrets. It was founded in 2012 and just recently became quite popular. In the CBC article, they say that they have about 2.5 billion page views a day currently. And the concept, it's just massive. So the concept is that you share a secret and they basically take whatever your text is and they lay it on top of an image that they either choose from your database, or you can upload your own image. And it's like sharing secrets, but it's definitely visual as well. So it's a kind of a visual-based platform, which I think is somewhat different than some of the others out there. And it's totally anonymous, but of course you can have a user profile there. And when you comment and share, people can see your name. So I don't know. I mean, this is a certain demographic, I think. And I don't really fit in there, but it's taking off. What can we say?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we're just, you know, scrolling through these whispers. And a lot of this reminds me of, I don't know, it's like teenage angst. I mean, there are a lot of these that I find myself kind of rolling my eyes at, like, okay, you're posting anonymously on the internet about something and I'm glad you feel better, but why would I ever scroll through all of these? But they're also sort of compelling. You've got this text that's...
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, that's on top of, you know, some sort of, you know, some of these seem like stock photos, right? This one that I'm looking at now that says, I purposely make it colder in my room so my girlfriend will snuggle up closer. Well, that's probably not the two people that we're talking about here, but you get the message of the fact that somebody wants to, you know, hug more. But it's like, what do we all get out of this? They're wildly popular. I mean, Secret the app, which I'm not really looking at anymore because, I don't know, I have better things to do. But I know a lot of my friends are constantly saying, ooh, did you see that one secret? Who do you think that was who sent the message? Because Secret is a little bit more social. Whisper is totally anonymous and doesn't connect you with anybody necessarily. But are we all just so sick of talking about ourselves and promoting ourselves and retweeting each other and liking each other's posts that there's something really compelling about being an anonymous person and being more honest about how life really is?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of want to try to see the positive side of this. And I think they do mention this in the article and we've talked about it on the show in the past. But I almost want to believe that it's just a younger generation and there's a backlash against all of the public sharing that they've grown up doing on Facebook or other websites. And they want something that's a little more private, a little more anonymous, you know, hence something like Snapchat growing in popularity over the past year or so. So I want to believe that. But at the same time, I just can't help but think how self-indulgent something like this is. You know, it's like, I mean, there have to be more productive things to do with your time, but I don't know. If you need to vent or share, I guess if you're not doing anyone harm, I guess it's okay.
I think there must be something to the fact that people complain, oh, Facebook always makes me feel bad about myself because everybody's posting the pictures of their family trip to Hawaii or how lucky they are to have such great friends or here I am doing this amazing thing or here I am all dressed up and I look so good. And we've been trained to share the good stuff. And the bad stuff, it is shared online as well, but less so. And that's really not a fair representation of how life is. So there must be something about this where, not that Whisper is all about bad news or terrible things, but there is some, you know, this one I'm looking at here, I use my middle name on Facebook, so I'm not associated with my family. Well, geez, obviously you're not going to post that on Facebook. Your family's going to see it. So there's some therapy thing going on here.
I think that's what it feels like. It's almost therapeutic, right? I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's what it is for people. It's therapeutic. It's like there can be no backlash or anything because it is totally anonymous, but you just need to get it out of your system. So, I guess it's mobile therapy, if we can call it that.
Sure, yeah.
Smartphone therapy.
Yeah, and let's just hope at some point, if you don't like your family, that you aren't exposed, I don't know, traced back to some IP address later on when Whisper is hacked. That's my fear in all of this. It's like, I really can't get involved. Sure, I could say all sorts of crazy things anonymously, but I just don't. I don't feel like anything's really anonymous online. You know, it doesn't work that way. Someone will find you and it'll haunt you. And then you'll be that person who posted that you hate your family on Whisper. And I don't know, maybe I'm just paranoid, but I've seen it happen too many times.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. So anyway, people who use it, you know, maybe they love it and maybe it is therapeutic, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be popular. So what can we say, Sarah? Now, speaking of something that may also be therapeutic for people, people love cats, Sarah. So we have to always have a little cat story on the social hour. And I'm coming around on the cat thing because when we first started the show, I have to tell you, wasn't the biggest cat fan in the world.
I'm glad to be turning you towards the right side of the force.
Exactly. So now I keep seeing these stories and I can't help but include them. So for our social cats segment this week, this is a story about Tim Berners-Lee. And he was doing an AMA on Reddit, and it was to mark the 25th anniversary of the proposal he created to create the World Wide Web. And I guess one of the questions he asked was, he was answering a question about, is there something that you are surprised that the web is being used for? And his answer in the AMA on Reddit was kittens. I guess it surprised him.
That's so great.
The whole kitten, the popularity of kittens and all the cat memes and everything took him by surprise. So it wasn't in his master plan.
Well, yeah. And I mean, Tim Berners-Lee, yesterday was actually the 25th anniversary of Tim Berners-Lee's original proposal for this I don't even know how you really even talk about the World Wide Web before it started. I don't know, a series of infrastructure that became the World Wide Web. So yeah, I mean, the Ask Me Anything on Reddit was obviously to coincide with that. And he actually has some not lighthearted visions for what he thinks the future of the internet should be, especially because there are so many privacy issues and security issues that are plaguing people in all over the world. Variety of countries. But I do love the fact that that was like that question floated up to the top, because of course on Reddit you vote up questions and answers that you think are relevant or good or funny or whatever. And I really think that kind of sums it up. It's like, who would have thought that 25 years after the World Wide Web basically started, that the creator of it all would say, you know what I really didn't know I was creating was a forum for kittens where they've thrived like never before.
Yeah, you almost want to say, I was surprised that this would fuel revolutions in countries that were in the middle of conflict, and yet he's like, kittens. So,
I love
nonetheless.
It.
So a cute little answer on that particular Reddit AMA.
Well, I, for one, am really glad that we have a little section of our show, just a tiny one dedicated to cats, because there's always something. There's always something. We could have gone with Grumpy Cat at South by Southwest, but we didn't. We went with Tim Berners-Lee and his kittens. All right, let's take a quick break and thank 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. 99 Designs makes it basically effortless to get a perfect design that you're going to love for your next project. It's an online platform that connects creative entrepreneurs like you with a community of graphic designers, a huge community, 280,000 of them. If you're looking for a new logo for your company, a website, a t-shirt, anything really, there's a designer at 99 Designs that is ready to help bring your idea to life. If you want to start your next design project today, you've got dozens of designers that you can choose from. What you do is you submit your design to 99 Designs, you explain what you're looking for, what's your project, maybe you've got some sort of a vision that could help somebody get started. Then dozens of designers will submit their designs to 99 Designs to you. You get a lot of creative ideas, maybe stuff you didn't even know you wanted. Oh, wow, this logo looks so cool. This one designer really took it to the next level. I love it. I didn't even know that I wanted that. Then you give the designers feedback, and then you choose the perfect design for you, and that's the one that you pay for. This all happens within a week, by the way. So the process is, it's fun, it's fast, your satisfaction is guaranteed because you got a lot of stuff to choose from. Works out great for you. You can start your next design project for as low as $199. Just go to 99designs.com/social hour. Get a feel for how it works. And we've got a little goodie for viewers and listeners of our show, a $99 power pack of services completely free if you go to 99designs.com/social hour. Power pack, what you get is your design highlighted and featured in 99 Designs Marketplace. So you get twice as many design ideas. So you've got more to choose from. It gives you more control over what your design will look like. And so that's $99 power pack completely free. Just go to 99designs.com/social hour. And we thank 99 Designs for their support of the show. Okay, let's get to some viewer feedback. We got an email from Bert, who is Bite Marks on Twitter. That's a good name. B-Y-T-E Marks. And he says, hello, Sarah and Amber. I've just wondered if you've checked out Stellar. Stellar.co is the link, which I have not. And then he also linked us to a GigaOhm write-up about the service. Now, Amber, I am literally looking at Stellar for the first time. I like the look of it already, though, especially since this is an iPhone app. And the teaser is, everyone has a story to tell. Tell yours with photos, videos, and text. Sounds sort of familiar, doesn't it? I guess we can watch the demo video and see what... Well, all right, so... You post a new story, right? And then you select a photo that has to do with that story. Well, the layout is certainly nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, you can choose a variety of layouts. And then... Okay, so it's sort of like... So this isn't just sort of some sort of an update on, let's say, Path or another kind of visual network. This is actually putting together... Almost like a little book, maybe, that you would put together about, I don't know, a vacation or something that happened, or
like a journal almost.
Yeah. Okay. So there's like a photo, and you can say, you know, in our demo video, we're seeing that this person is explaining what. Okay. So you've got photos and videos. This is pretty cool, actually.
It looks gorgeous. I mean, just for our audio listeners, I mean, like Sarah's explaining, I mean, it looks almost like a cross between Path and Medium, if that helps at all to visualize anything.
It does, yeah.
But much more visual, too.
Well, and this is kind of that photojournalism quality that I think some people do well on Instagram and others not so much. I mean, there are certain people that I follow on Instagram, say, Amber, that... They'll post a picture, and then there's a really kind of always there's a long paragraph associated with what the picture means. Maybe there's a story behind it. Maybe they were in a new city, or they were taking a photo of this person who's very interesting. And those are always my favorite because there's this context behind this image that I like. I like the story behind it. You know, it's not just an image of a sunset. You know, there's a story behind how hard it was to get up to the top of the mountain to take this photo of the sunset or whatever. So it seems to me that something like Stellar is trying to put that all into a better package to give us those tools so that we can say, here's this photo or here's this video and here's where I was, here's what I was thinking about, here's what time it was during that moment, there's always a story behind stuff like this. So I don't know. I'm going to talk about this on i5 next week.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if you can also share the stories on Facebook and Twitter. Did you notice an option for that when you saw the video? I mean, I didn't see that.
No, but I can't imagine that there wouldn't be. You know what? There probably is an option to link it to like a permalink, I would think, on the website, which is, you know, how Instagram used to work before Instagram had a web presence. Or how Path still works now. I love it. Bert, I had not seen Stellar written up on GigaOhm before you sent it to us. So good find. I can't wait to try it out. Now, Laura, who is sort of your relative.
So Laura and my brother are getting married in August, and Yay! Laura has listened to The Social Hour for a long time now. And funny enough, she actually is here in Florida. So they just got here a day ago, and she came up to me this morning. She's like, I emailed The Social Hour because I wanted to ask you guys about something that happened to me on LinkedIn. And I was like, okay, cool. Hopefully we'll put it in the rundown. And of course, Sarah did. But this is her email. She says, hey, ladies, here's a first. I just received a say happy birthday to so-and-so notification from LinkedIn. Do you get these? Seems like more of a Facebook thing to do. And what she had mentioned, Sarah, is that there was someone that she worked with or did an internship with years ago. And all of a sudden she got this notification that said it's so-and-so's birthday on LinkedIn. And she's thinking like, I'm not even in touch with this person. We're not close. Like, this is sort of Facebook territory. And why is LinkedIn doing this all of a sudden? And I hadn't noticed it was doing it, but it seems somewhat out of place to me as well, I think.
Yeah. So I'm on my LinkedIn because I haven't been here in a while, and I actually find that LinkedIn has some of the most aggressive notifications ever. It took me months to turn them all off because LinkedIn does one of those things where you say, yeah, turn off these email notifications, and LinkedIn says, okay, and then you get another one, and it's like, didn't I already opt out? But it's a different kind of LinkedIn notification. It's like, oh, no, you only turned off the ones that update you when someone changes their title at work. You've still got all of these other, you know, pending friend requests or that sort of thing. So I'm no longer getting LinkedIn notifications, but it was tough to get to that point. So there's probably some birthday notification I turned off at some point. But when I'm on the site, when I'm looking through my contacts, I don't see anything about birthdays. So it's kind of like this like random thing that I guess some people are getting. Oh, look, Dr. Kiki. She's got a new photo. She looks great. But here's another one. Say happy work anniversary to someone that I used to work with, Jay Speeden, who now lives in Shanghai, who I guess has been at his job for 4 years. Oh, man, gosh, time flies. But it's sort of like, okay, well, that makes a little bit more sense, I guess. Does he really want me to say, hey, happy anniversary of being at your job that I have nothing to do with for 4 years? Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's sort of a polite thing to do. But the birthday part of it seems, you know, I guess what bothers me the most is I think we're all kind of trained, especially in a professional sense, that, you know, you have to be a little careful with people's ages. And, you know, there's certain workplace discrimination that's involved with that. So, I mean, we celebrate birthdays here at TWIT, and that's all fine and good. But I don't know how much I would want anybody that I'm a LinkedIn contact of to be sending me happy birthday messages. I might be like, where did you get this information? What does this have to do with, you know, my career?
I think it's a stretch. I mean, I think even the work anniversary thing is kind of ridiculous. Like, who really remembers their work anniversary? I mean, maybe if you absolutely love your job or you would remember it. Maybe because I'm self-employed, I just don't even care because it's not even a date that I would have in my head. But I think the birthday thing, it does feel like Facebook territory. And it feels like, you know, for LinkedIn to kind of stray into that world, I don't know. It feels like a massive stretch. And I'm with you on their notifications. They're really aggressive. And it's like the when they did that campaign a while ago when they said, oh, you're in their top percentage of people on LinkedIn with the best profiles, and they really go after you. So I think they have to be careful and definitely cautious about this because they don't want to ruin what they have. And I mean, I think they have a pretty good thing right now.
I know. I can think of a few people. I will not out them, although they outed themselves at one point, that are like, I'm done with LinkedIn. The notification thing is out of control, and I'm deleting my profile, and I refuse to use it because it's that annoying. It's not that annoying to me because, well, I guess, especially for our jobs, it's like LinkedIn not only is a good service, but we kind of have to have our profiles active so we know what's going on there. But yeah, it's unbelievable that a company that's built on, I don't know, networking the right way. And as we talked about earlier in the show, if you do the wrong thing on LinkedIn, you're going to go viral and people are going to think you're a terrible person. But LinkedIn itself is so pushy about all of these notifications. But, you know, maybe that's part of the reason that it's grown so much.
You
kind of got to be
pushy.
And
you know what? We're not alone, Sarah, because Kevin, who just tweeted me on Twitter, says, I've wondered about birthday notifications on LinkedIn. I find them unneeded and not professional. Hashtag more spam, hashtag something to delete. So I'm sure there's other people who feel that way about the birthday thing. You know, it's like they feel like they always have to talk to you, right? It's almost like going to the hair salon when the stylist is always talking to you. You know, it's okay not to talk for a few minutes. Just stop sending us notifications.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Oh,
that was a random. That was a random comment.
That's okay. No, that's okay. I actually, my hairstylist I've been going to for like 7 years. So we're always chatting because I basically know her really well at this point. But sort of the same thing. You know, you get people who complain, yeah, the cab driver talks to me too much, that sort of thing. And it's like, yes, I know, ultimate first world problem. But sometimes you just want to bury yourself in your phone and do your social thing and not actually talk to the person who wants to talk to you.
Yeah, I totally agree. We just got another tweet from James who says, a work birthday is completely inappropriate for people to do because the longer you're at a job, the higher expectations become.
Oh, expectations become for the birthday party or for the employee?
I'm kind of getting the feeling that what James is saying is that maybe it's also a reminder that you've been there for a long time and that's a lot of pressure. And I don't know, you know, it just feels like, you know, if you said, oh, you've been in this job for 10 years, congratulations. You're kind of like, oh my God.
Right. It's like, what's the implication that you never, you didn't have enough drive to go get a better job? Yeah. It can be read a variety of different ways and not all of them positive. All right. No. Well, we did mention maybe birthdays should be should stay on Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, Robert wrote us and said, because we were talking about Facebook paper last week and some new features, he said, there is a feature I haven't heard you mention. It's called interest lists on Facebook. It allows you to create something of a separate news feed just for pages you follow. He says, I'm an author. I have a Facebook author page. I follow other authors' pages, so I created a list for those pages. There's also one for my geeky interests. He follows Will Wheaton, Geek and Sundry, and so on. It's simple to start a list. He says, I think you have to do it in the web version of Facebook, not in the app. Below the app section is the interest section. If you click on add interests, then you can choose to follow an existing list or create your own. Robert says, it's useful in keeping up on pages that might get lost in the regular news feed. I can also keep up with those pages if for some reason I haven't logged in and read Facebook in a while. And he kind of goes on and says it can be helpful for, you know, business pages, creator pages, charity pages. News feeds can be cluttered. I agree with you there, Robert. He says, even if you have it organized by most recent stories, if you post on these specialty posts on these specialty pages can get lost in the noise. The interest lists feature might help those pages break through. Well, I don't have any interest lists set up. I do think that I think I'm aware that you could do this, but I had forgotten about it, Robert, and it's a great idea, I think, Amber, especially for, because my news feed is crazy. You never know what's going to surface. Like the post from my friend who was at South by Southwest saying, we're okay, thanks for your concern. That was at the top of my news feed this morning, probably just because, I don't know, there were maybe a lot of comments from people or something, so it rose to the top. But I never really know what I'm going to see. So it's helpful if, yeah, you're following, I don't know, news organizations or charities or just, you know, celebrities or even friends.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, especially as what happens is we have almost like friend creep in some ways on Facebook and on Twitter, where more and more we have these massive communities of people we follow and we friend. So it's nice to be able to streamline that through interest lists or something in that area.
Yeah, so look, on my Facebook page, here we are, right under the developer section, I've got interests. So I've got pages and public figures. So that's something that is automatically populated for me because I follow some pages or public figures. Or I can add my own interests. So I could say something like, let's search for, tech. Oh, that's kind of interesting that tech VIPs is a suggestion based on, developed by Robert Scoble. So we must have enough friends in common that these are suggested to me. We've got tech news featuring you, Amber. We've got startup investors, more tech news photographers. This is actually very cool. But if I was to say something like SPCA, then yeah, there are interest lists that are based around that keyword. Which of course is animal shelters, and I love all that stuff. So this is actually a really great little tip because I haven't added any interest lists, and what better way to make sense of Facebook than to categorize what you're interested in?
Yeah, no, it's a great idea to do it and just be able to streamline everything a little bit. So thank you so much for the tip. Also, just wanted to mention another tweet we got from Gardner to go back to the LinkedIn conversation, who says, the bottom line for me is I no longer trust LinkedIn with my private information and to know what should be private. So that's an interesting take we're hearing on LinkedIn. And I think they, again, want to kind of avoid going the path that Facebook has gone where people start to lose trust in them because it never pans out.
Yeah, especially since LinkedIn is not, it's not about personal life. It really isn't. The birthday thing does seem, I mean, even if it's not, you know, offensive or something to get a notification about birthdays from LinkedIn, it just seems irrelevant. It seems like there are so many other things that the company could focus on.
If they bring back the poke, Sarah, what if there's like a LinkedIn poke?
There was never a LinkedIn poke, was there?
No. No, oh. But what if there were?
Can you imagine? Hey, you haven't hired me yet.
Hey, you didn't answer my LinkedIn email that I sent you.
I want to be your contact.
That could get really irritating.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. So that's, you know, you introduce a feature like that and more people are going to start snapping at other people via LinkedIn. Reminder that we love hearing from all of you. You help us make our show each week. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Amber Mack on Twitter or Sarah Lane on Twitter are great ways to get a hold of us, not just during the show, but during the week. We get so many content suggestions from you, people saying, hey, have you guys seen this? It seems so perfect for your show. We love that. Do keep them coming because the two of us can't find everything. We require your efforts as well. You can also leave us a voicemail if you'd like to talk to us at 2626-SOCIAL, 2626, S-O-C-I-A-L. If you're feeling really brave, you can even record a video of, I don't know, some question, comment, feedback, anything, even a walkthrough of some social app that you think that we'd like. Upload it somewhere, send us the link. We will consider everything, and thanks in advance for all of your feedback. All right, Amber, before we get to the rad or fad this week, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace. They're our third sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform. It's not just a blogging tool. It's not just a hosting tool. It's all of these things and with great customer service as well. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it really easy to create a professional website or online portfolio. I have a Squarespace site myself. I talked about it last week, and I regret to say that I did zero things between then and now because, I don't know, I'm lazy and I have no attention span. But this is a Squarespace site that I put together in seconds flat. Literally, this is a template that I made absolutely no changes to. I just imported a bunch of information from my old site to Squarespace, and I can't wait to get started. Yeah, look at that drop-down menu. I mean, I didn't build that. Squarespace did all of that for me. And from there, I can make all sorts of changes to the design of my template. I can add photos and banners and certainly content and all sorts of good stuff. I can't wait to get started. It's just one of those projects that I've got to dive in and stop talking about it and just start doing it. But Squarespace really has beautiful designs. That's really what I'm getting at. 25 really beautiful templates just to get started with. You can do absolutely no customization to them and they'll look amazing, or you can do a lot of customization if that's your bag. They recently added a logo creator tool, which is a tool for individuals and small businesses with limited resources to create a nice little identity for themselves. I love their little logos because I don't really know how to create logos. But yeah, you add something. You've got some neat iconography over on the left-hand side, and it really starts to come together easily where you say, oh, wow, I love this. This is my new logo. It's easy to use. There's a whole e-commerce section as well, now available at all subscription plan levels. If you want to sell things via your website, including the ability to accept donations, which is great for some sort of nonprofit, or maybe you're trying to collect money for a wedding registry or some sort of a fund drive, the e-commerce area of Squarespace is extremely helpful. They're not going to make you build that yourself. They're going to do it all for you. And plans start at just $8 per month. That includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Good stuff. Hosting included. Domain name included. If you want to try out Squarespace for yourself, start a free 2-week trial. No credit card is required. Just start building your site on Squarespace. You got 2 weeks. When you decide to sign up, because you're probably going to love your site and say, this is exactly what I want, make sure to use the offer code SOCIALHOUR. Just one word, SOCIALHOUR, to get 10% off. And of course, just to show your support for us. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Social Hour. Again, 2-week trial. Completely free. When you want to sign up, use the code SOCIALHOUR and get 10% off. And we thank Squarespace. A better web awaits, and it starts with your Squarespace website. All right, Amber, what do we have on deck for Rad or Fad?
Okay, so this is a new app that just recently came out in the UK, and I think you're going to figure out very quickly which side I'm on as far as rat or fat as I describe it. The app is for kids to learn how to program. It's called Tinker, and what it allows kids to do is to essentially, in very basic ways, start to do things like recognize patterns, break down problems into smaller steps, be introduced to programming concepts like sequences, repetition, and conditional logic, and it's a really interesting app. For quite young kids, and it will allow them to just kind of, you know, dip one toe into the programming world. And one of the reasons I think this is kind of interesting, Sarah, is I believe it's in Estonia, where in school they start to teach kids to program in grade one.
Wow.
So we know that kids can learn how to program at a fairly young age, and it's an interesting thing to introduce them to. So I have to just come out and say that I think this is not just a fad, even though there are lots of different apps like this. I do think it is kind of a rad trend, but more importantly, this particular app looks kind of neat.
Yeah, it does. It's Tinker with a Y, by the way, for our audio listeners, T-Y-N-K-E-R. Honestly, Amber, it's you know, I said earlier in the show, it's like, I don't really know much about programming. I certainly would like to. It's one of those things that I always say, you know, one of these days, I'm going to teach myself a programming language. By the way, we have a new show on Twit. It's all about programming.
Programming 101.
It's good for all of us. But I think that, and there's a lot of emphasis, and maybe it's just because I live in a very programmer-heavy region of the world, Silicon Valley, where all the programmers are, that you do hear stuff like, oh, you know, you need to learn to code if you want to make it in this town, that sort of thing thrown around. And I don't necessarily feel like programming is some job that's on some sort of a higher level than anything else. But it's certainly in demand. It's lucrative, or can be anyway. And I think that even if a child isn't going to grow up to be a programmer and wants to do something else, it is a foundation for the way that languages work, and computer technology and computer science, that it's just good to have that knowledge. And when you start at an early age, it makes more sense. I think I probably will have a much harder time understanding certain concepts than a first grader in Estonia who is just learning, along with a lot of other things, the way that these computer languages play out and what's going on, you know, under the hood.
Yeah, I think it's especially cool. I mean, when I was in school, I was in an immersion class. I won't say what language I was learning, because the reality is I don't speak that language ever anymore. And yet, at one point, I was almost bilingual. But if I could go back and if it were possible to learn programming, I think that would have been kind of cool. So for my son, for example, who's 5, I mean, I would way rather at this point that he learned how to code than maybe learned another language. I'm sure there's a lot of people who may disagree with that. But I think as far as securing his future, and like you say, getting a great foundation where, in terms of where there will be jobs down the road, I think it's a really important skill set. And I think apps like this can definitely help at some level. So it's kind of a fun one. I think it's pretty rad to see someone coming out with something like this that, you know, it's not about getting, you know, selling to kids, but instead about educating them.
Absolutely. Coopman36 in our chat room says, one of our after-school programs uses Tinker to teach third graders about programming, and they love
awesome.
It.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
I know. And I hadn't heard of it, but now I'm going to talk about it on iPad Today next week. Maybe Leo and I can see if we're smarter than a third grader when it comes to programming.
Oh, that sounds like a show in itself, Sarah.
Yeah, right, yeah. It should be, right? Who's the better programmer here? I think the kids would win each time. But no, I think this is rad, too. This is definitely rad, which is good because we've had a few fads, I think, the last few weeks. But really, you know, kid education, anything that works and is teaching kids something that is a valuable skill later on in life, or, you know, even not, you know, while you're still a kid, you can start writing some programs. I think that's great.
Can't go wrong.
All right. Well, on that happy note, that happy programming note, we've come to the end of our very social hour here. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Certainly the live viewers, reminder that we are live on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Amber, you are, I know you're in Florida, but you're going to be there next week too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to be here next week as well. And I think the week after too, Sarah, if I'm right. I'm getting
lucky
my dates maybe mixed up, but I'm here for a bit.
Awesome.
Until the snow melts.
Yeah, you just stay in Florida until things defrost. up in Toronto. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where you can keep up with everything that we talk about each week. Links are there, video, if you want to share it. It's all the good stuff happens over at twit.tv/TSH. Of course, you can find our show on iTunes. If you like the show, tell a friend. Let them know that we're a couple of social gals who would like to hear from them as well. All right, until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.